Each year, the Anti-Defamation League releases a report detailing the number of anti-Semitic incidents in America. The audit for 2022, released last week, showed a surge in anti-Semitism nationwide, including assaults, vandalism, and harassment. The audit details the highest level of activity against Jewish people since the organization started keeping records in 1979. We'll talk to the ADL about the audit, including how Ohio fared, how social media plays a role amplifying anti-Semitic messaging, and what can be done to stem the rise in hatred. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas. I'm Rick Jackson. Later in the hour, we bring you the newest episode of IdeaStream Public Media's podcast, Living for We. The series examines why Cleveland ranks last in livability metrics for black women and about what's being done to improve outcomes. This week, we hear from younger black girls about their experiences growing up in Cleveland, about escaping discouragement, and about their hopes for their own futures, beginning with a visit to an elementary school. First, the latest national and local news. It is The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Rick Jackson. Thank you for joining us. Anti-Semitic incidents surged in 2022, according to an audit released by the Anti-Defamation League last week. The audit tracked nearly 3,700 incidents, including reports of harassment, vandalism, and assault. The ADL says all 50 states saw increases in those reporting categories. The League Center on Extremism compiles the audit. On average, the center says there were 10 anti-Semitic incidents per day in 2022. That's the highest level of anti-Semitic activity since they began compiling records in 1979. Record broke a record that was set just the year before, 2021. It's part of what the ADL says is an upward trend in hate and vitriol aimed at the American Jewish community over the past 5 years. We're going to discuss the findings of the audit as well as what can be done to stem the rising tide of hate in the first half of this show. Later, we'll bring you the newest episode of IdeaStream's new podcast, Living for We. So with me in studio for the first conversation, James Pash. He's the ADL Senior Director of National Litigation. Welcome back to The Sound of Ideas.
Thank you, Rick. It's great to be with you.
Good
this
to see you again, yes. By telephone, we have Kelly Fishman. She's the ADL Education Director for Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Western Pennsylvania. Also the Interim Regional Director. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick.
To join our conversation, give us a call at 866-578-0903. Email us, soi@ideastream.org, tweet us at Sound of Ideas, or you can text a question or comment, 216-916-6478. James, let's start with just your reaction in general to seeing these numbers come out.
Unfortunately, I'm unsurprised, right? Because we have been at the ground level responding to these incidents each and every day across the nation as kind of the 911 for the Jewish community. But while I'm not surprised, we should all be dismayed that this is where we are in 2023. And the upward trajectory of anti-Semitism in this nation is unsustainable and it must stop, Rick. I mean, you know, we're looking at year after year after year continuing to break the record that's set from the year before. Right? We've been tracking since 1979 and we have never seen anywhere approaching 10 incidents a day of assault, harassment, and vandalism directed towards the Jewish people. 3,697 incidents in 1 year. It has to stop, and it's going to take a whole-of-society approach to get it to stop.
And we're going to get into some of the reasons why it's gone up and some of the fight against it. But yeah, as we mentioned in the introduction, every single state saw increases this year.
Yeah, across the board.
Kelly, were you also as unsurprised?
Yeah, unfortunately, the data confirms what Jewish communities have been seeing firsthand across the country. And what really saddens me is the increase in K-12 schools and campus communities. You know, we want our schools to be safe places for our kids. We want campuses to be places where ideas can really flourish and grow. And when we see the rise of anti-Semitism in these places, it just tells us that not only do students not feel safe, but neither do their teachers and their professors.
And even though it wasn't a Jewish school this week that was attacked in Nashville, it was a religious school. So, yeah, certainly that plays in. James, we said upsetting, but this is more like terrifying.
Yeah. It's terrifying, you know, and it's terrifying not just to the Jewish community, Rick. It should be terrifying to all of us, right? I have long said that that anti-Semitism might be the world's oldest form of hate, but it is very much the canary in the coal mine of hate, right? Once you see a rise of anti-Semitism across the country, you will see a rise of all forms of hate. And we're going to, as we have seen, as backed up by FBI hate crime statistics that were just released, right? A rise of anti-Black racism, a rise of anti-Asian racism, a rise of violence against our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, right? It is, there is a rise of hate in this country, and it's palpable. And if you talk to individuals in those communities, in our community, we could all feel it, right? We don't need to see the stats, Rick, to tell you that hate is on the rise.
You mentioned the FBI report. I just pulled it up here. Hate crimes in the United States increasing 12% in 2021 from the previous year. Those are the latest numbers they have. And they said that, as you just mentioned, 16% of that targeted for sexual orientation, but 15% targeted for religion. So certainly it's not just your numbers. If anybody wanted to say, oh, they're skewing it their way, you're not. These numbers are coming from the federal government as well.
That's what we know about, Rick,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
statistics are also underreported, mm-hmm. right? We have whole cities in the United States that report zero hate crimes, which we know is not reality. Mm-hmm. And so, right, this is just a snapshot of what we know.
Kelly, the audit doesn't put down any singular cause to what's behind this upswing. So walk me through the multiple factors we see.
So we're seeing a lot of things at play here. There's not one single rise, like you, or one single reason, as you said, but we're seeing a lot of trends. So the emboldening of extremists and hate groups in our political discourse, the growing acceptance of anti-Semitism in mainstream pop culture, and then the rise in online hate, all of these things work together to contribute to the spread of these anti-Semitic tropes. And then, like James said, the other forms of hate that we're hearing about through FBI hate crimes data. So while, again, it's not one single factor, these things really work together to impact these communities in which we live.
Talk to me a little bit about how this audit was compiled, where the information actually comes from. As James said, not everybody even reports.
Right. So we take incidents. We have an incident reporting system where we collect incidents. It allows us to work directly with constituents. So when they report an incident, and it does not just have to be anti-Semitic, so listeners know, you can report any incident to the ADL. We also obviously track the anti-Semitism, and it allows us to reach out to people directly once they report that incident. So we have 25 offices across the United States, an office in Israel, so you have a local office responding when these incidents come in and working with communities, whether it's workplaces or schools. But it allows us to add these incidents to the audit when they come in.
866-578-0903 if you have questions or comments for Kelly or James. The report tracks, Kelly, several categories of incidents. Can you give me some examples, the kinds of things that we're seeing?
Yeah, so we track harassment, vandalism, and assault. I am happy to say the bright spot in the report for our region of Ohio, Kentucky, Western Pennsylvania, and West Virginia is that we did not see any assaults reported to us. So again, I like to highlight that they weren't reported. We hope that they haven't happened, but it was the one category in our region that we did see go down. But things like Miami University, Osuka being destroyed, where we had in Columbus, a private security guard for a Jewish school made threats on social media about shooting people at the school. Several different religious institutions received either online messages via their online contact forms about threats of anti-Semitism and hate or support for Nazism. And then also the vandalism of not just swastikas, but things like the Celtic cross and the 1488 symbol. We do have a whole list of hate symbols on our website for people who maybe aren't sure what those are. We do have a very extensive list that is helpful for people if they need it.
Thank you. Glad you detailed the area that you work in, these four states here. But when we look at the numbers, raw data, New York, California, New Jersey, Florida make up half the incidents.
Yeah.
That's just a frightening number. We've seen the rise in white supremacist activity. James, how's that factor into the audit? How does that factor into where we are as a nation right now? And I know people right away are thinking Charlottesville.
Sure. Listen, there's an an undoubtable rise of white supremacist and far-right extremism activity across the United States, right? Just a couple of weeks prior to our audit report, we released our report and findings about the rise of white supremacist propaganda in this country that are really spread. 93% of those incidents across the nation are done by three white supremacist groups, right? The Goyim Defense League, the Patriot Front, and White Lives Matter, right? And they are spreading their propaganda of hate across this nation.
Does that embolden more people to go ahead and do something they might have been thinking about when they see organizations?
You know, I think undoubtedly there has been a rise of extremism, right, in this country that you have to overlay, right, with the rise of these organizations and propaganda, right? When you just mentioned Charlottesville in 2016, right, there is a through line of extremism and anti-Semitism and white supremacy that exists in these two pinnacle moments in recent United States history, from Charlottesville and the chance of the Jews will not replace us to the storming of our Capitol building on January 6th, led in large part by the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and Camp Auschwitz sweatshirts inside of the Capitol building. Right. And so there is this, like I said, this palpable rise of white supremacy and these white supremacist groups across the country.
If you want to call in, 866-578-0903, the number. Let's go to the phones. Brian's on the line from Lakewood. Brian, welcome to the Sound of Ideas.
Hi. I was curious if they haven't already discussed it. It sounds like they may have just been discussing it, but if the panelists could talk about their opinion on the rise of QAnon conspiracies in certain political parties and how that may have affected the rise in anti-Semitic hate crimes. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Thanks, Brian. Kelly, have you seen anything like that across the four states that you handle?
We didn't track that specifically, but as James said, when we look at our rise in anti-Semitic attitudes and when we look at the rise in white supremacist propaganda, and we know often sometimes those things, there is a correlation between them. You know, we're seeing legislation that is coming out that then mirrors those attitudes. So when we have states that don't have mandatory Holocaust education, we have a significant number of people that now know less about Jews, Judaism, Jewish history, and minimize the number of Jews who've died in the Holocaust. There are many people who don't even know 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust. And so when we start to see some of those white supremacist attitudes, the propaganda, and it works against, those theories work against the knowledge of what actually happened in these communities, then we start to see that correlation with the rise in anti-Semitic attitudes, which then when we see those, that rise in attitudes, we start to see the rise in other forms of hate, and it takes on bigger and more devastating forms.
Mm-hmm. And Rick, if I could follow up with that, because you know, I know the caller specifically was asking about QAnon, right? ADL helped bring the groundbreaking case against the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers for their actions on January 6th. And when you look at the extremist connections of the 980 people so far who have been arrested for their actions in that day, 67 of those individuals had direct ties to QAnon. So, you know, undoubtedly the caller's concerns are verified, right, mm-hmm. By actions that we are seeing on the ground. And, you know, I know he also asked about our politics and our political leaders. You know, we have to refuse to, quote, accept this notion that we, quote, live in a post-facts world, right? We need to demand from our political leaders that they speak out against conspiracy theories, that they speak out against hate wherever and whenever they see it. No matter the, you know, quote, political consequences for doing so, right? We need our government leaders to be leaders at all levels, from school boards to the White House to members of Congress and members of state houses across this country. We need everybody to stand up and say, not on our watch. We are not going to let the growth of hate continue in this nation.
Thank you. Kelly, had a caller who couldn't stay on the line but wanted to ask about how we count the numbers. Wanted to know if this is per capita, but you were specifying that these are reported numbers only, so it could be even higher than what we're seeing. But what are the numbers for Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Western Pennsylvania?
Sure. So we saw a 40% increase in harassment in our region, up from 57 incidents in 2021 to 80 incidents in 2022. And then a 69% increase in vandalism from 16 incidents up to 27, which gave us a 37% increase in incidents from last year, from 2021 to 2022, from 78 to 107. So that is actually more than the national growth, which was 36%.
Are any of your four states worse than the others?
Ohio saw a dramatic increase. Unfortunately, all four of our states saw an increase, but Ohio was the largest.
Mm. We haven't talked about celebrity. The artist formerly known as Kanye West and former Cleveland Cavalier Kyrie Irving have helped push anti-Semitic narratives. James, their celebrity kind of helps amplify the message?
Yeah, right. We need people, Rick, to use their platforms responsibly, mm-hmm. right? And to certainly not use their platforms to spread messages of hate and anti-Semitism. You mentioned Kanye a second ago. Kanye has more social media followers than Jews that exist on this planet, Rick.
And say that again?
He has more social media followers than Jews that exist on this planet. And he is using that platform to communicate to his followers the worst types of anti-Semitism. It must stop, and it's not a coincidence that we then saw his words being used by white supremacist groups hanging banners over highways saying Kanye was right. Mm-hmm. Words matter. Words lead to violence. And we need people in positions of power to choose their words wisely.
Thank you. Kelly, I know the survey showed that one in every five Americans buys into these anti-Semitic tropes or beliefs. That's a dangerous trend as well, not just the incidents, but the belief system.
Correct. And I think that's why, you know, education is so important. When people maybe don't know anyone who's Jewish, as James just said, Kanye West has more followers than there are Jews in the world. And so if you are less likely to have a relationship with someone who's Jewish, then you can have those conversations about shared or different experiences. Then we need to make sure that students are learning this in schools. What was the Holocaust? What happened? Because if you don't even know what happened, it's really easy to fall into those myths and tropes, or that the Holocaust didn't happen. It's easy to fall into those if you don't have the knowledge to back it up or the understanding to combat that.
I was looking, when you talk about Jews in the world, James, I was looking at some numbers yesterday in preparation for this. New York City has more Jews than any other city, Jerusalem being second, but Cleveland is 27th. We have a good-sized population here of Jews of the world.
We do. You know, Cleveland has such a strong, vibrant Jewish community. I'm so proud to be a part of that Jewish community. And I got to say, this community knows how to come together and rally together against anti-Semitism and all forms of hate, and to meet the moment that we're in.
Thank you. Let's go back to the phones. Todd's on line one. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sound of Ideas.
Hey, good morning, Rick, Kelly, and James. Please listen to this carefully before you respond. I would like to know, how are you defining individually hate and racism? Those are strong words to me, and I like to know what people's strict definitions are as they're using them to convey a point. In addition to that, are you aware, James, that although statistics are used to underreport something, they're often used to exaggerate the perceived facts of a given matter?
So Rick, Hey, you know, I do not believe that our reports or our statistics are used at all to exaggerate. They're used to show a snapshot in time of where we are right now when it comes to the state of anti-Semitism in this country. And I think the facts are undeniable. As far as how we define hate, how we define racism, how we define anti-Semitism, right? When we talk about whether there's an anti-Semitic incident or whether there is a racist incident, right? It is whether an individual has committed an incident that targets somebody for who they are or community for who they are.
Whether it's whether religious, it is sexual,
Whether it is their religion, whether it is their race, whether it is their sexual orientation. And make no mistake, we respond to all of those incidents. Mm-hmm. And we work with community partners. And when necessary, we work with local and federal law enforcement. And we will continue to do that work, Rick. You know, I say this all the time, but ADL does, across the board, three things, right? We educate in our K through 12 schools and our college campuses. We investigate. We work directly with law enforcement and organizations in responding to incidents. And we advocate for legislation to keep people safe. And now, Rick, we litigate, right? Mm-hmm. Because these hate crimes that we're talking about across the nation, yes, they're crimes against individuals, but they're crimes that are being done to send a message to an entire community of people. And now we're going to use the courts to send a message back, right? That you are responsible for your actions and that we are a nation of laws. And we are going to use that law and these laws to protect the Jewish people and to protect all people.
Thank you. Running short on time, a couple more callers. Please use the last word line if we don't get to you. Stephen had called in to ask if there's any political bent. Do you see anti-Semitism coming more from the left or the right, or does that not even matter?
Anti-Semitism comes from both the left and the right. And we need to speak out against it wherever and whenever we see it, Rick. And the only when anti-Semitism becomes politicized, gets used as a political weapon or tool by parties or individuals that are holding office, the only people that lose are the Jews. Right? We need people to call it out. And it doesn't matter what side of the political aisle it's occurring on.
Okay. One of our listeners wrote in to say that Nelson Mandela said people must learn to hate. If they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. I want to thank James Pasch and Kelly Fishman with the ADL for both being here today. Thank you so much for your time and your information.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate you.
Thank you. You can find a full link to the full ADL audit of anti-Semitic incidents for 2022 on the Sound of Ideas stream, or the Sound of Ideas show page. Thank you so much. Coming up after a short break, we'll bring you the newest episode of Ideas Stream Public Media's podcast, Living for We. Marlene Harris-Taylor talks to young black girls about their hopes for the future this week. You're listening to the Sound of Ideas. You're with the Sound of Ideas from Ideas Stream Public Media. I'm Rick Jackson. IdeaStream Public Media's new podcast, Living for We, explores why Cleveland ranked last in livability metrics for black women and what's being done to change that narrative. This week's episode, the third in the series, focuses on young black girls who are part of an after-school program, Queen I Am. The program seeks to empower these girls and helps them navigate issues such as fear of violence and body image. Podcast host Marlene Harris-Taylor, who is IdeaStream Public Media's Director of Engaged Journalism, speaks to several of the girls about their current realities and their hopes for the future. We also check in on Cleveland's attempt to create a commission for black women and girls to make the city more livable, for which, a year after its creation, no members have been appointed. Here now is Marlene Harris-Taylor with this week's episode of Living for We.
In January of 2020, Bloomberg City Lab published an article about a new study from Pittsburgh researchers naming the best and worst cities for black women. Among cities with at least 100,000 black women, Cleveland came in dead last in terms of livability. In this city with a nearly 50% black population, this news drops like a bomb. And reactions were mixed. Do you think Cleveland is really the worst for black women? And what do you say?
I say...
It depends on the person they ask. When I dropped it in one of my black girl group chats, the emojis were just eye rolls.
I'm not surprised. Not even a little.
It's heartbreaking and also embarrassing.
Is it like this everywhere? Is it me?
This city
will make or break you.
City of Black women that are looking around at their outcomes, their future, their past, and saying, this city makes me anxious.
If anybody's out there listening in Cleveland, please get out.
On Living for we talk to Cleveland's Black women from all walks of life, from the CEO of one of our major healthcare systems to self-starting entrepreneurs, judges, lawyers, doctors, artists, students, and mothers who've experienced loss. We share stories from these women as change makers and architects of their own futures, celebrating their victories, challenges, and personal growth along the way. So, is it really true what they say? Is Cleveland deserving of the least livable title? And what can we do to make lasting improvements for Black women in our city? I'm Marlene Harris-Taylor, and this is Living for We, a project of connecting the dots between race and health from IdeaStream Public Media. Enlightened Solutions' Chi-Chi N. Kimra and Bethany Studenick are planning to make a public comment before Cleveland City Council about the perceived lack of urgency in appointing members to the city's promised Commission on Black Women and Girls, an initiative directly inspired by the 2020 study that ranked Cleveland the worst city in America for Black women and by Chi-Chi and Bethany's Project Noir research.
When people think about moving to Cleveland, they hear that we are highly segregated and redlined, that Black women and babies are dying at an incredible rate, and that we are the worst city in America for Black women. The reality is simple. Cleveland will never move on. We will never thrive until we confront our culture of exclusion.
Every Zoom meeting I am a part of, I am asked, what is taking so long? And who are the impediments? We encourage you to allocate financial investment to this work, along with moving it forward quickly. We're up against incredible odds. I believe in you. Do you believe in Black women?
So here we are recording this podcast on March 22nd, 2023, nearly a year later. And the community is asking, hey, whatever happened to the Commission on Black Women and Girls? While red tape at City Hall is slowing down the progress of the commission, there are real Black women and girls who are suffering in Cleveland. And as we continually discover on this season of Living for We, the best solutions for Black women tend to come from Black women. We're in Garfield Heights at an after-school program called Queen I Am, run by Damiana Willis.
I value sisterhood. I value individuality. You may think you know who I am, but I know who I am. I am on this journey to discover who I am and who I was to be.
Damiana created the program out of a need she witnessed while working in an educational setting. A need for a positive environment, specifically catered toward Black girls.
I was working for an organization in a school that it was very few of us. And the girls that looked like me, the little girls would cling to me. So they would come and, oh, Miss Shana, Miss Shana. And the girls, they were struggling. And I'm like, you don't really like who you are. Like, you're struggling with your confidence and your self-esteem. You're trying to figure out who you are, not just as a young lady, but who you are in your environment. And it's only a few of y'all, and it's only one of me. And so they will come up for lunch, and the conversations will talk about some of the things that they felt was going on or some of the differences they felt. They noticed they didn't fit in. So it will come three girls to come up, and then it was 13. And next I know, the whole 6 to 8 Black girls would come and be in my little QB, like, wow, in the school.
So they were seeking you out because they didn't see anybody else, yeah, in the school who looked like them.
Yeah.
And they didn't feel, sounds like they didn't feel seen,
mm-mm,
in their school environment.
I said, I want to make my own thing. Like, and it could be academic, but I really want to focus on the idea of self-love and loving who you are. Looking up how to make a logo, how to make a website, made a flyer, and I did like a breaking news, like a new program is in town. And I did it at the library nearby my house, and 45 girls showed up. So I kept booking the library room. Every other Saturday, I would come, bring pizza, bring supplies, and we'll set up shop. Now, like, getting contracts in schools, where we do this program. And now I have a real curriculum and it just moves so fast. And then we've been blessed with our space. We have an actual space girls come to. And you ask them, like, well, why did you come to Queen Aya? This is my safe space. This helps me escape, some girls say, like, my jungle. I feel I could be myself here. And those are all the things that I want them to be. They're learning how to sew. We do Girl Scouts, yoga, cooking, hip-hop dance, STEM, financial literacy. So we focus on four core areas: college and readiness, financial literacy, health and wellness, and service learning.
You heard it?
On the day we're visiting, the girls are having their weekly pizza party. And we had some incredible conversations.
Zamir, I'm 12 years old.
And the younger sister?
Zayana.
How old are you?
10. The thing that's fun here is just to learn how to do new things and how to learn how to be a queen.
What does that mean, to be a queen?
Be positive, be nice, and just pick up your crown when you don't feel good. When you don't got positive, like, pick up your crown.
So even if you don't have, if you're not feeling good that day, you pick it up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Are you able to do that? Because I know it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Cleveland is a good place for Black girls?
I don't actually.
I would say maybe, but like kind of not, because it's different people that's like, you know, trying to kill people and stuff. Like different people just act weird around white, Black people and white people.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you worry about that? About people getting killed and stuff like that? Do you worry about that?
Mm-hmm, kind of.
Why do you worry about it?
Because you never know if it happened to you or your family members.
That's so true. Do you know anybody that's happened to?
Mm-hmm.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry.
One of my aunties and my papa.
They got shot?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Sorry to hear that. So that can be scary.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you worry a little bit.
Especially when you get older, because you never know, like, you can get pulled over by a cop and they just ask you to grab, like, your license or something, and they could just shoot you automatically. Even if it's, like, it could be your skin color or not. But it could depend on, like, the way you carry yourself if you do grab it.
So what could Cleveland do? Like, when you guys grow up, what would you like to be here for you, to make Cleveland a great place for you?
I just want more, like, equality.
You have to figure out what you want to study.
Probably biology.
Biology, that's good.
Because my first thing that I really wanted to be, like, my dad was so focused on this one, I wanted to be a scientist. Like, he got me, like, this, like, it was like a
skeleton,
miniature
thing.
Skeleton with
so
the heart,
with the insides
and stuff.
Nice.
All of that stuff.
I want to be a veterinarian when I grow up.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Why I want to be in
a
college.
Vet?
Yeah.
You like animals?
I love animals.
You do? What do you have, dog, cat?
I got a dog, hamster, and a leopard gecko. And I run track.
Are you fast?
Yeah, I run a medal, a trophy. And I also want to have a bracelet business. I do got a bracelet business.
Already?
Yeah, we made.
You're a little entrepreneur.
So, we made $100 this month. Yeah, probably this month.
So do you guys think that one day when you grow up that you want to stay here in Cleveland, or you think you might want to move somewhere else?
I would want to stay in Cleveland. Probably would like get a vacation house over somewhere where I could just visit anytime, just to go over there, because I have a lot of family in Cleveland.
Girl, that's my dream. I'm trying to get a vacation house in the Bahamas. You know, and then just come back
every now and then when
the snow is gone.
Okay. Maybe if my family don't move with me, I'm gonna still come back and visit my family, because I don't want to stay too long and then miss my family and get homesick. So I'm gonna visit. Yeah.
So what is it that you have learned through the affirmations, and what is it you like about yourself?
I love my hair. I actually used to hate my hair because it was so curly and thick, until Mom grew up and taught me, like, thick and curly hair is basically representing your culture, and it's basically saying, like, you should love this about yourself and stuff like that. She said thick and curly hair is actually really good hair, because it's stays long and it grows very fast. And she was a lion, so.
So further than
that. Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Okay, something that I like about myself is sometimes my body, because sometimes I think I was fat. Because not a lot of people, but different people, like, you know, in school and stuff, would say I'm fat. But now since I, like, grow, I think my body cute. And my mom, my family told me that I was cute and looked like my dad, not because I'm chubby.
My name is Kylie, and how you spell my name? K-Y-L-E-E.
My name is Noella. My name is spelled N-O-E-L-L-A.
I'm in second grade, but like, I read as a fifth grader, and I'm doing multiplication and division as a second grader, so I'm smart.
At my school, I get treated differently, and I'm like probably almost the only black girl there. We barely have black girls. We have more black boys, but we have more mixed and other type of skin people in our school. So it's barely black kids in our school.
But you're the only black girl in the first grade? Yeah, so how does that make you feel?
Different.
So what do you think about Cleveland? Do you think Cleveland's a good city for black girls?
It's okay. It depends on what school you go to, what job you go to. Like, if you go to, like, a school with, like, a lot of black people and barely any white kids, then you might have, like, a easier time there. But if you go to a school like Kylie does, with, like, mostly white people, it's kind of hard.
What about for you, personally?
I go to a black school, so it's not really hard for me. So I get treated the same.
You get treated
the
same?
And I have a black teacher. I have a bunch of black friends. I go to a really black school.
Mm-hmm. So how is Cleveland overall for you, personally?
It's fine, because I haven't really experienced a lot of life yet. I really want to know, because I've only been here, like, 8 years, so.
True.
I'm like a walking convenience store. I sell candy and snacks. I sell candy. I sell chips. Yeah, I sell that stuff.
Okay.
And I've been making a lot of money from it. But when I get older, I don't really want to do that. I kind of just want to, on my own modeling agency, I can make a lot of money for that. I can have like a really good life if I'm able to achieve that dream I have. So.
So what do you think, Kylie?
When I grow up, I want to be an artist. So I'm gonna use crayons or I'm gonna use oil pastels. Because I'm not really that good with paint. Paint is messy. Sometimes it's, like, really watery. But I might use paint in my future of painting.
So when you guys grow up, what do you think could make Cleveland a better place for all of us, for black girls, black women? What do you think can make Cleveland even better for us?
What I think will make Cleveland better for us is we can get the same equal pay as white people. I think it should just be a better place for black people, black women, black girls, just black people in period, black men, just black people. I think it should just be a better place for us.
My favorite thing about myself is that I'm different because imagine everybody was the same. Nobody would do anything differently. We would just do the same move every day. Everybody do the same move.
My favorite is I love myself. Because if you don't love yourself, you can do some seriously, like, really bad things to yourself. Like, you can commit suicide to yourself. You might not treat yourself right. It just might be hard if you don't love yourself. You might just have a hard life if you don't love yourself. So
true. What about you, Kylie? What's your favorite
affirmation? My favorite one, I love my hair. Because your hair is natural.
Yes.
So if it goes, like, poofy, it's natural.
That's beautiful. That you guys love your hair. Love yourselves. That's fantastic. So what do you think when you grow up? Do you think that you want to go to college?
Yeah, I'm going to go to college because I'm going to live my best life.
All right. I know that's right.
I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. I'm 8. I ain't even in middle school yet.
Good point.
People are not aware of how younger the lack of self-confidence and the lack of feeling like if they are enough is getting. It's no longer the big girls no more or the older girls. It's young people talking about, yesterday we had a self-love painting and the girls, I said, what is a way that you can show yourself you don't have self-love or you don't love to yourself? And a third grader said, deciding if I want to be here or not. And she's not talking about the space. She's talking about her life, like deciding if I'm worthy enough to keep living this life I'm living. And that's a third grader. I'm like, it ain't no longer the big girls. It's the little girls that are looking in the mirror and My daughter's 6 years old. She's a little chunkier, and she says stuff like, well, if I was thinner, or if I looked like her, I could do a cartwheel. And so that's why we branched. We started at 8. We took our programming down to 6, because the little girls are having conversations about their hair, their skin color, their body shape. Is that enough to make them who they are?
And that is so scary. Yeah,
it is. And like I said, if the third grade can say that to mom, I know it's happening. And it's conversations around these challenges they see on social media. Social media, TikTok is telling them how to dress, how to walk, how to talk. This is the accepted look. This is the look that you're supposed to look like. I tell them, if you wear blue pants, when I was in high school, I tell them all the time, when I first went to my high school, I came from a predominantly white school, and I wore my colorful clothes and my loud clothes, and they would look at me like, she dressed too loud, like she's over the top, she's extra. I was so worried about what they were going to say, even though that was my style. And I tell the girls all the time, I end up winning best dress as a senior. I say, if you want to wear blue pants and red shoes, that's what you, and you got to have the confidence to rock them blue pants and them red shoes. And that's just with anything. If you want to do this and go down this path, you got to be strong enough and have the confidence to go down that path. And the girls that I had at the school I was at, they're in Bethune-Cookman, they're in college now. They're beautiful. I wanted to not just teach academic, but like tell my students, like, you could be that girl.
So Dr. Angela Neal Barnett, welcome back.
Glad to be back, Marlene.
So we spoke to these little girls. They're so cute. And hearing about their hopes and their dreams for the future, like, what did you pick up from listening to them?
They do have a hope and a future. And through the program, they really see that. And that's what you want to hear from girls. We have to begin early pouring into their spirits, and the school system can wear them down.
As parents, we send them to school hoping that they get educated and built up.
But there's more to education than just reading, writing, and arithmetic. If we're in predominantly white schools, how will whites view us, and how that then impacts how we view ourselves? So she recognized that. She recognized we cannot wait, because it's seeping into these girls' spirits. It's causing depression. It's causing anxiety. And I got a third grader who's trying to decide whether or not to end her life.
And it broke my heart to hear one of the kids talk about when we asked, what do you think about Cleveland? What do you think about Black women in Cleveland? What do you think about Cleveland for you? For one of the kids to say, well, you know what? I worry about violence.
Yes.
And I've seen violence impact my family.
My aunties, my siblings, I've seen this happen. And it changes things within the brain. So when people say, well, Black kids' brains look different than white kids' brains, it looks different. Because of the violence, because of all these adverse things that are going on, because of the racism.
For parents who might be listening to this, what can they do to give their kids the affirmation?
That I've lived long enough to know that this is true. Hope never disappoints. And so the first step is to have hope, and to give that hope to your child. Secondly, how you start your morning impacts the rest of your day. I know how hectic mornings can be, but if you can carve out 5 minutes of your morning just centering yourself and your child. So if it's just saying, okay, today, I'm starting the day by saying, today I am grateful for X, Y, Z, and just go, each child saying it, and then you saying, today I am grateful for, that makes a huge difference. Breathing. So even just some simple breathing before everyone leaves the house. And you only need 5 minutes.
So that's advice for the parents with children. What about advice for the grown-ups? We heard Chi-Chi and Bethany talk about they're continuing to advocate for the Black Women and Girls Commission in Cleveland, but it has stalled. And so how do we, as Black women, remain hopeful that this is really going to lead to some real change?
We get a theme song. Just like we have a song for love, we need a theme song that allows us continue to advocate, continue to uplift one another as Black women and girls.
Just like they did back in the 60s.
Just like they did back in the 60s.
I ain't going to let nobody turn me around.
I'm not going to turn me around. And if you can't think of one, I'm going to give you mine.
Okay.
So that you can borrow, and everybody can borrow.
Okay.
And it's, I don't feel no ways tired.
Oh, I love that one.
Nobody told me that the road to seek this commission would be easy, but I don't believe that I've come this far to leave. You mentioned the 60s. Why did those people, they sang. They sang when they were in those jails. They sang when they were crossing those bridges. They sang when they faced the police and the dogs, because singing gives hope. Singing calms fear. Singing lets you know that there's a better day around the corner. In Cleveland, we're going to face roadblock after roadblock after roadblock, because it benefits someone to keep us as the worst city for Black women and girls.
That's right.
Who benefits does not want to see change.
Hmm.
But they're up against a city of hopeful Black women who understand what it is that we are doing impacts our generation, the next generation, and the next generation. And that's why we are living for we. We are living to make a difference.
And before we go, as always, we want to share some words from you. Here's one of our listeners who called into our hotline.
I'm a positive person, and you're around so much negativity. It's kind of hard to show positivity to people. Especially in cases where you grew up and your best friend got shot at 12. Your dad went to jail at 2. And you grew up and your brother died when you were like 7. Like, that's just your reality. It's really sad that we have to move out of the city, because the city is not a bad city. It's just we have people that are stressed, and it's like a dog-eat-dog city. You have to leave the city to even get a peace of mind. Like, I live around white people, and like, I don't hear sirens every day. I don't hear gunshots every day. But when I was at home on the East, that was an everyday thing. It's sad, because it's stressful. Like, we're fighting every day just to live, because you don't know if you're gonna get caught in a drive-by. You don't know if you're gonna get caught in some form of gun violence. It's sad.
If you're a Black woman in Cleveland and want to share your thoughts with us directly, our hotline is open. Leave a voicemail at 216-223-8312. That's 216-223-8312. And you may just hear yourself on the podcast. And don't forget, if you're a Cleveland resident and you want to help the Commission for Black Women and Girls get off the ground, we have the power. Contact your city leaders and let them know what you think by clicking the link in the show notes. Thanks. thanks for joining us. You can find more episodes of Living for We on ideastream.org/livingforwe or wherever you get your podcasts. Living for We is part of the Connecting the Dots Between Race and Health initiative from IdeaStream Public Media, produced by Evergreen Podcasts and made possible by generous support from the Dr. Donald J. Goodman and Ruth Weber Goodman Philanthropic Fund of the Cleveland Foundation. The Living for We team includes myself, Marlene Harris-Taylor, host and executive producer, Hannah Ray Leach, our lead producer, and Hey Fran Hey as producer and creative director. Chichi Nkemra and Bethany Studenik of Enlightened Solutions are our researchers, data analysts, and community partners. We get production help from Stephanie Chekolinski. Original music, including our theme song, is by Cleveland artist Afee Scruggs. Our mix engineer is Sean Rule Hoffman. We'll see you soon.
We bring you the latest episodes of Living for We every other Wednesday here on The Sound of Ideas. You will also find the show at your podcast provider of choice. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And you can also catch earlier episodes checking out the podcast website. We've provided a link on today's SOI show page. To get the last word on today's topics, send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We're also on Twitter @SoundOfIdeas. You can follow me there @RickJ903. One of the calls we didn't get to take on the first segment was from Jim, who pointed out that what he calls average white guys are largely supportive of diversity, not to be painted with the broad brush of white supremacy. Tomorrow in The Sound of Ideas, utility companies are telling us that electric bills will be substantially higher this summer. What's behind the increase for consumers? Part of the hike came in June of 2022 when public utilities commissioners approved a rate hike for energy, increasing the default rate for customers. We'll talk with an energy policy reporter to learn more. If you missed any portion of this program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. You can also hear a rebroadcast tonight at 9 on 89.7 WKSU. I'm Rick Jackson. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.